And I think being flexible and being curious is the best way to be adaptive, certainly in this new world where things are changing so fast, but also to make sure you're always getting what you really still want and allowing what you want to change.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. My name is Sagi. I'm the founder and CEO of Tonkin. And today, I have the very pleasure to host Freya Horwitz, the Director of Procurement at TripAdvisor. Hey, Freya.
Hello. Nice to see you. How are you? Good. Nice to see you,
very
too.
Very good. Very good. Well, there's several areas that I would love to jump in. As also, you know, consulting for a number of nonprofits and a bunch of other things. But maybe before we start, you can kind of tell everyone a little bit about yourself, the background, and what you're up to right now.
Sure. So like you said, I'm Director of Procurement now at TripAdvisor. I've been at TripAdvisor for a little over 15 years, but only in procurement for about six. Started in product management there. Before that, I actually started in consulting and marketing, and actually way, way back accounting. So I've done a little bit of everything in my career. At TripAdvisor, I also did IT enablement and enterprise business systems and sales operations before I went into procurement. So truly a little bit of everything. And now I also get to play lawyer sometimes when I look at the contracts. So.
Wow, that is everything.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from maybe writing code, I think you did everything.
I've done that too, actually.
There you go.
But the company I worked at before this, we had one developer and I helped localize the site. So I would mostly cut and paste code, but I did a lot of the localization coding myself as well.
Well, that's very impressive, first of all. So how did you end up in procurement then? That's the obvious question.
So when I was in IT enablement, I was working with our head of procurement, who is now my boss, our VP of Enterprise Commercial Strategy, and was working with him on some big contracts, Salesforce, Slack, you know, some of the big providers that we still use today, and really enjoyed working with him, enjoyed the process. And then when I was looking for something a little bit different, he said, how about you come over to the side? And I said, sure, sounds great. Let's try it. And it's been a great experience. I've learned a ton, have now been bringing new people into the organization and teaching them how to do procurement as well. So it's been a really good journey just in procurement as well.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, I think, 15 years is a decent amount. How early were you in TripAdvisor?
Not early enough to, but I think the day I started, we had about 1,200 employees, and now I think we're around 3,500. I think at one point we were a little more than 4,000. So fairly early on in the process, but not super early.
Well, that's actually even adds to my questions here, because I think, you know, if you join the first 50 people, then it makes sense how you got to do so many things. But joining when you did, it's very unique. So I'm kind of curious, like, how do you approach it? I think a lot of people are listening in and they're like, wow, like I'm worried about like doing anything that is not something I'm used to.
It's definitely, I think, a lot about curiosity. And, you know, we have these corporate values, and one of them is we love to learn. And that's totally sort of my approach. I've actually gotten two certificates in sort of graduate certificates since I've been a TripAdvisor, plus a couple of other things. But I like to always do new things. I like to learn new things. And so when I started, I was on the consumer side, and then I moved to the mobile side of product management, and then I moved to the B2B side of product management. And that was all fairly, you know, straightforward because it was all under product management. But every time I learned something new and could take that to the next thing. And so when I was ready to switch roles for whatever reason, what I had learned in the previous role or two always helped me with the next one, even if it wasn't a direct translation.
Oh, I love it. I do. I've been saying for many, many years that especially as you move to like IT operations and then like internal, like something called business applications and now sort of like to the, some of the internal service teams like procurement, like I always felt that business operation teams, they're product people that just don't know it yet.
And yeah, so, I actually tell people that I take a product management approach to procurement and our operations and our processes because I'm very iterative about it. You know, I've noticed some of our finance team is a little bit resistant to change, and I'm changing, tweaking our process every week because, oh, this isn't perfect, so let's try this, or let's add this step, or let's remove this step and make it easier. And, you know, my perspective is it's never done, but it also doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah, I love it. So, okay, let's jump then to kind of like where we are now, right? Sure. So even 15 years, multiple roles, but also a lot of change in the last, you know, 10, 15 years. This last 2 years feels like. Yeah, exactly. So what's new? So when you came into the procurement department, for example, what did you get? What did you change? Like, what was your first kind of focus?
So when I first came into the procurement team, we didn't have a contract system. So we had no idea where our contracts were. We had no idea what our contracts were for the most part, except for the very large ones. We had no process in terms of understanding what was on our pipeline or what project we were working on, except for a whiteboard that we could write things down on. So I took all of those things on top of some of the negotiations that I was doing and took from when I was in IT, because I was our JIRA administrator, one of our JIRA administrators there. So I actually built a JIRA project for procurement to use for workflow in quotes, as much as it could be, very, very basic, but it was better than nothing. And because I had been at TripAdvisor for so long already, I knew a lot of the players across the company. So I reached out to all of my contacts and asked them to send me all of their contracts, because everyone just kept them pretty much in their own hard drives. And so I asked everybody I knew in every group to send me any contracts they had. And we actually put them into a Google Drive folder. I mean, again, not very sophisticated or complicated, but leaps and bounds better than where we were, where we didn't have any idea what we had. And we put together a Google spreadsheet of all of the contracts and when they were expiring and all of the metadata that we needed to know. So we actually could go out to the business team when it was time and say, hey, this is expiring. We need to renew this. And so that was how the process started. And then, you know, as I said earlier, in terms of being iterative, we just keep trying to improve that process. We finally got some orchestration tech in last year that has taken us to a whole new level of automation, which is amazing. But if we didn't have that foundation in terms of knowing where our contracts were and any of that, I don't know that the tech would have helped us at all. So we had to start there before we could go to the next level.
When you kind of talk about that stepping of like nothing is anywhere or everything is everywhere and there's no like maturity to the process, you know, it's a little bit like that kind of first digitization, right? Or like the digital transformation. And so now you're talking more automation, orchestration. I know obviously orchestration became a lot more kind of familiar word. You know, we've been using that for many, many years now. What do you think has changed from like the maturity of the market or of your, from your perspective, from your team, that sort of like allow that next step?
Well, I think there were a lot of little steps. So I think moving to digital signatures in DocuSign or Adobe Sign or whoever you use, PandaDoc, all those various e-signature companies, I think that is an important step because you have the digital document already. When I first started in procurement, I would have to get a paper document wet signed and then go to the copy machine and scan it if I wanted a digital copy. And then if you copied it that way, it didn't OCR, so you couldn't do anything with it. So I think there were lots of little steps that allowed for what is happening now to happen. And without those, they couldn't have. But everyone, every conference I go to now in procurement, it's all new vendors trying to sell orchestration. But honestly, a lot of them are also data mining companies who are selling orchestration, who aren't really selling orchestration. They are providing orchestration tools in order to get the data to do data mining and selling that data. Because I think, as we all know, data is what the valuable thing is these days. It's the commodity that everyone wants. And so companies are doing whatever they can to get your data. So we've been very careful about who we're working with and what access they have, because that at TripAdvisor, at least, we're very protective of our data.
Absolutely. So what is the value then? Because you mentioned another thing that I want to connect to is with the change management and the, you know, the pushback on change. Any thought about that? How has that improved in that last 5-6 years you said in procurement?
Yeah. So honestly, when we moved to the new system that we have, there's been zero pushback. Everyone's actually really happy about it because they can look for their own contracts now. They know where their projects are in terms of who still needs to approve it. They know who they can go bother. That's not necessarily me. You know, if it's being held up by the department manager or it's being held up by finance, they can go bother those people and say, why haven't you approved this yet? Because it's very clear that until that gets approved, it doesn't go into the procurement work. So there's been no pushback on that. And then the only part of the pushback we've gotten has been that the TripAdvisor culture was very much a do whatever you need to for your team and don't ask, just do it kind of culture. And so there are a lot of teams that are still going through click terms and putting their credit card in to buy something without talking to anybody, without checking the legal terms, without doing anything like that. And we're slowly getting that changed, but that's been the hardest part of the process is because people feel like we're slowing them down. They don't want that. And that has been a TripAdvisor culture, is to get slowed down by things. So that's been the hardest part. But in terms of collecting the contracts, in terms of digitizing everything and having the workflows, there's been no pushback at all on that.
Nice. Well, I guess when they see their value, right, they're playing along. Another thing you mentioned is sort of like how you go to conferences, everyone, you know, use the latest keyword or whatever, and not everyone are kind of doing the core of it. That maybe is a good segue to the elephant in the room or every room right now, right? With kind of, you know, where does AI put in? Like, I'm kind of curious, you guys don't want to be slowed down as a culture, you know, use whatever kind of, like, how the adoption or how does the perception, because at the same time you said, you know, data is like an issue. How does that been for TripAdvisor?
So AI has definitely been a new challenge for us because we have teams and they just want to try everything. And to my point about us being very careful about our data, we're a public company. So we also have to be very careful in terms of SOX compliance and making sure that companies we work with comply with laws and GDPR and things like that, because we're so big and we're so global. You know, we can get fined pretty heavily if one of these companies lets some of our data slip. So it's been very much a push-pull with the team saying, like, no, you can't use these AI, even you can't use AI features for products you already have unless you get it cleared by legal. So we have an AI process that is tangential to the procurement process. So if it's, we want to use AI features, or we want to use we have a new use case for AI with a tool we already have, then it just goes to legal review. And we have an AI steering committee that reviews it and security team. So we have those teams that look at those, and I don't do anything with it because we're not buying anything. It's just sort of a new use case. And then we have our regular procurement process if it's a new tool that we're looking to sign up with. I think the challenge with that part of the AI work is that the commercial models are all over the place because it's so new and no one quite knows how to price their AI tools and no one quite knows what we should be paying for AI tools. So that's a challenge on my team and in procurement negotiation to figure out, like, what is a fair price for whatever we're getting in this AI, because it's just too new still that there's a lot of models that don't work that are traditional sort of software purchasing models. As far as AI for procurement, specifically, we've been playing with it a little bit. We haven't really gone in. I'm a little bit skeptical. I'm very skeptical of the tools that say, oh, we'll just negotiate for you. We have an AI chatbot that will get you the best deal. I'm very skeptical about that. I don't believe it works. We have had third parties negotiate for us that we, you know, work with, benchmarking companies, things like that, and they never get us the best deal. And those are people who know how to negotiate. That I don't believe that an AI bot is going to be able to do better than a person when it's still person to person and relationships matter and conversations matter. I do think we're moving into an era where it's going to be a little bit more like, I'll say, new car buying. So buying a Tesla versus buying a Honda, where you just click and purchase something versus you go to the showroom and you have to talk to a car dealer who you hate dealing with. And that's a little bit how I feel about, you know, some of the salespeople I have to deal with. It feels very much like buying a car. And I think that AI is going to help increase the transparency on both sides so much. The whole buying model will change. Probably I'm guessing like five-ish years, maybe less. And I think it's going to change how companies staff their sales teams. I think it's going to change how companies staff their procurement teams. I think it's going to change what procurement teams do as part of the process. But until then, I'm very skeptical that AI can actually do that. It is very good at looking at contracts, looking at multiple contracts and spitting out analysis of it. And, you know, I've thrown 4 contracts into AI and said, hey, you know, which one of these is getting the best deal? They're all with the same vendor. We have 4 different business units. They all signed on independently. Which one's getting the best deal? So which one should I use in order to benchmark against the rest of it? And it does a very good job of things like that. So there's definitely a purpose for it. It's not replacing procurement people yet, but I think eventually it will just change the way things are bought.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at Tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
I'm very aligned with that motion and thought process. How do you see it more globally? You know, as we kind of said in the beginning, you've done a lot across different departments, different functions. So if you put the hats of your previous, you know, roles, right, where do you see the sort of ripest, if you will, area where you feel like, you know, where it is right now, the tooling and this, and the, obviously it's not going to get worse. It's just going to get better. So like, where is it in the crust of making like really transforming a role?
So I think definitely in development, it's probably there or almost there in terms of helping our software engineers build code, build tools. I think it's going to change that a lot faster. I was talking to a friend of mine who's like, I don't know why anyone would major in just like plain computer science now, because that's just going to be outsourced to AI. If all you know how to do is write code and you can't think about how the product should be built, I think there's going to be a merging a little bit of product manager and developer, because you won't need to know the coding languages to build tools. So, and I think that's pretty close already. I think there's a lot of AI use in marketing right now in terms of dynamic ad management and being able to tweak things, update things very quickly. That is super helpful that we couldn't do before. So on the marketing side, I definitely see there being huge uses for AI tools, especially in content creation. I think on the customer service side, also the AI bots continue to get better. And especially if you're relying on a outsourced customer service team that just has a knowledge base that they look at and they just give sort of the canned answers for the most part from the knowledge base, then that's going to go away pretty quickly. And that's going to turn into AI bots pretty quickly, I think, especially with the agentic AI where they can make their own decisions. You know, you give them rules and it can do its own thing. It doesn't just have to spit back out an exact answer from a knowledge base. I think those are probably the places that are ripest for, call it, takeover, along with sort of generic analysts where, you know, if you're just sort of a number cruncher and that's all you do and you're, we'll say, just reporting the news, but you don't have any perspective on it and you don't have any ways to make it better or to do something with it or to propose something with it, I think that's when you're going to be in trouble if that's all you do is sort of crunch numbers and just that's all you do.
I think we see it in, we work with finance teams sometimes too, and you see that, you know, there's a lot of crunching there too, and a lot of, so that will be interesting. But if we kind of like look now at the sort of like later side of it, both your time in IT and now in procurement, if there's one thing I hear all the time from procurement leaders, and we work with legal as well, so legal leaders and HR, is always the like, we want to be more strategic. Like we want to be, you know, have a seat in the table type of phrasing. That is something that when you look at AI and agents, you know, at least on the promise of it, it should help unlock that. Do you believe that part? Do you think, what's your thoughts around that?
So I think if the buying does migrate more towards sort of a very transactional, we'll call it buying a Tesla model where there isn't really negotiation between two people. It's just, and we even see this already in some of our software deals where they don't negotiate. This is the price. This is what, you know, fine, we'll give you a discount if you buy annually and not month to month, or we'll, you know, it's a 15% discount if you buy multiple years, but otherwise there is no negotiation. It doesn't change. As things move more towards that, and I think they will, then I think procurement has to be more strategic in order to stay relevant. And so that means moving upstream in the process. And so we're not going to be paper pushers, or in my husband's business, they call it purchasing people, which is really just like they place an order for a thing. And I keep telling him I'm not in purchasing. Like I don't, that my job isn't just to, you know, sign a PO and to make that happen. And I think it'll be more important for us to move upstream and work with the business and understand better what the business strategy is. And I can see there being more of a, I see a lot of combinations happening, but like a combination almost between like the FP&A people and the procurement people, where when you're talking about strategic planning and investment planning for the next year, you talk much more about, you know, what are your goals? And the procurement team, I think, is going to move towards more of a category management, where it's not just category management, but it's category optimization, where, you know, I ideally would have one person who is my marketing expert, and they would work with all of our marketing teams, and they would work with the agencies, and we would do the deep dives into how are we getting the best work from our agencies? How are we making sure we're getting everything we need, and really moving that way to probably do more RFPs, but also earlier in even that process to help the business teams define their requirements, define their evaluation criteria, and focus more on that aspect of procurement than the pure transactional bit.
One thing that I'm curious about where it comes to some of the operational structures we kind of got used to, and I agree with your assessment that a lot of things are going to merge or morph into like something else. But when you think about it, the aspect of the work itself. So you mentioned RFP, and I was talking to several episodes ago with someone about like what happened, you know, when AI writes the RFP and then AI reads the RFP on the other side. Do we even need like an RFP? You know what I mean? Like, is that the best vehicle? But that's like philosophically begs a different question of, you know, when you buy a Tesla, for that matter, it's a lot more transactional. It's a lot more like you buy a product. And I agree with you. I don't think anyone likes the car salesman. But when you buy like a more like premium brand of a car, after you bought it, when you pick it up, there's like some, they're like, you know, clean it for you. They're like, make all show for you. You come in, they like seat you in it. They show you everything. And in Tesla, you literally take your phone app that you just downloaded and you just open the door and you drive. There's like certain elements of it that I'm just curious, you know, just to finish the point and get your reaction is, you know, how they like say that people buy from people. So that's also interesting, right? Everything is transparent. If there's no, like, if it's more like a click, like who do you buy from at the end of the day? Are people still going to want to talk to people in order to be part of that and so on?
I think there's always, you're always going to need some sort of personal interaction, but I don't know that it's going to be traditional salespeople. Like I deal with a lot of renewals managers who don't really do anything except reach out 30 days before our contract is up and say, here's your new contract. I think those people are going away. I think those are the salespeople who we're not going to need people like that anymore. We're going to need the pre-sales people. We're going to need the sales engineers who explain what the product does and explain how you can get value from it. And the customer success people who build relationships with the company to say, we want to help you make this a valuable purchase for you, so you want to keep purchasing it. Because regardless of what area it's in, there are competitors now for every type of software. And so if I'm going to stick with one brand over another brand of project management software, for example, you know, part of it is the optimization or opportunity cost of switching, where, oh, it's a pain in the butt, I don't really want to switch. But part of it is also, is this product keeping up with what I need? Is it making changes? Do I feel like the company cares at all whether or not we stick with them? Or do I just hear from them when it's time to renew and they just want to keep increasing my prices by 10% every year and they don't really care about anything else? So I think there is an opportunity for there still to be relationships built. And I think that's actually going to become more important for the relationships to be built between the companies, the vendors and the buyers. I just think it's going to be a different relationship and potentially with different people. So I think there's going to be a lot more of the business stakeholders building relationships with the engineers and or support type people at the vendor versus the procurement people and the sale and the traditional salespeople.
Last question that is sort of like in that vein that I look back to the product point. There's an interesting trend where you think about the value of software providers in the 90s. There was a lot more that you had to do in order to provide like a software solution. A lot more customized, obviously, but there was a lot of things around that that just completely went away when you moved to the cloud. So as you brought SaaS into the mix, for the same business problem, you could have a lot more competition, you know, because entry point was lower and so on and so forth. Now, obviously, you know where I'm going with this is like when you kind of think about AI and do you even need an app type of question, how do you think this fans out? Because there's this, and then lawyers are still using Word and Outlook, right? Like those two realities exist. They're not exist for 1 year now. They exist for like 15 plus years. They're doesn't seems like they're going to go anywhere, in all honesty. Right. So like something like, and again, it might change, right? Like that specific example eventually, but there is something that is contradicting in what technology allows you to do and the pace of technology versus the pace of people willingness to actually let go of the project management tool, if I use the example you gave.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know, people get comfortable with what they have and it's very hard to get them to switch. We just went through a switch from Microsoft O365 to Google, and that was not comfortable for some people. And it was so uncomfortable for some people that they got to keep their Microsoft, namely the lawyers and the finance people who needed Excel. So, you know, it was, they just can't process that it can work a different way sometimes. And I think some of that is going to be just new people coming up through the ranks that have started with different processes. My kids have only used Google Drive. My daughter now has to use Word. She's like, I don't know what this is. Her college is in a Microsoft shop. And she's like, I don't know what to do here. I've only used Google Drive, which is the opposite of most people my age who started with Word and had to migrate over the other way. So I think there's going to be people coming up and lawyers coming up and finance people coming up who are using the new tools and have learned how to use the new tools and have learned how to use the AI tools to do some of the work maybe that required them to have some of these old technologies. And the AI tools will help them move to the new technologies. So I think it's just going to take time. And there are, I'd say, generally types of people who are, they go into certain types of roles where you don't have to change so much. Whereas, you know, what I've always seen is that the product managers and the software engineers always move first. Whenever we want to introduce a new thing, like yes, let's do it. I'm on board. I want this new thing. I want this new shiny thing. Legal, finance, they're always the last ones and say, I don't want this new thing. Don't make me use it. So I don't know if it's a personality thing, just of people who go into those roles or what, but it's going to change over time. I know it's taken a really long time, but I am starting to see legal use like collaborative Google Docs and things like that to do contracts. I'm seeing that more and more, not enough yet, but it's happening. So
I guess maybe part of the question is, do you think with AI it will be different or it will use the same trend? Because it has the potential to be disruptive technology, right?
True. I see our finance team being really excited about AI and about not having to do a lot of the manual data crunching and things like that they've been doing for years. And I think they're excited and nervous at the same time because there's going to be a lot of finance jobs, I think, that go away with AI. But the people who are excited about using the new tools and figure out how to use them effectively and what to do with them will be the ones who get to keep their jobs. So I think I see a lot of excitement there of AI With legal, I don't see the same kind of excitement. I think there's a lot of skepticism with AI. I think AI is still not perfect enough for legal people in terms of the hallucinations and things like that that you still see, even if it's a, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5% hallucination. If you're relying on AI to redline a contract and it comes up with something that's just wrong, person still has to read through that and make sure that that doesn't get into the signed contract. So I think it's going to need to be proven to be a little bit better before legal really gets on board with using AI to write contracts. They might do it for a first pass of red lines, but they're going to feel like they still need to read the whole thing anyway in case it missed something.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think you're right, but I think that point about people that are adapting or are leveraging are the ones going to keep their job. I think that's a really key point. Because if you do go back to your same point around product and engineering are the first one to take it, any new technology, like when in the first time that took AI into the process, like a lot of engineers will tell you, like, I don't write code anymore. I just work with AI to do it. But they do in a way write code because they define like what needs to happen and they still review it. And so many ways, like exactly what you would want legal to do with contracts, but it's a mind shift. You know, we'll see how they adapt to. I think generally that's a good advice though. Maybe a good way to end this is kind of go back to your personal journey. You know, you're obviously a risk taker. You kind of jumped through the different, you know, different fresh pools of water that you've never been in before. You know, I always ask this for you, it feels like even more interesting. Like, what is a good advice you got maybe early on that sort of like carried with you even through all of those different roles and it still feel relevant today?
I think the advice I got and that I've given to people is like, don't worry about what you're going to do 10 or 15 years from now, especially if you're just starting your career. Don't say like, I'm going to be this when I grow up, or I'm going to go to here and then I'm going to go to here and then I'm going to here, because you have no idea what industries, what work's going to be in 10 or 15 years. I mean, the amount it's changed since I started working, the amount has changed since my father started working. I mean, he started before there were computers and then he became a CIO. So like totally, total career shift there because there weren't any computers when he got out of college. And so I like to tell everybody to just focus on what you want to do next. What is just the next thing you want to do and how do you get there? And then when you have that next thing, then you look around and you say, okay, now what do I want to do next? And you figure out how to get there. Because it leaves you flexible enough to change what you want to do. And I think being flexible and being curious is the best way to be adaptive, certainly in this new world where things are changing so fast, but also to make sure you're always getting what you really still want and allowing what you want to change.
I love it. Stay adaptable. Very nice. Awesome. Well, if anyone wants to, you know, nerd about this with you or learn more things, where can they find you?
LinkedIn's always a good place. I don't think there are any other Freya Hurwitzes, certainly not at TripAdvisor, so you should be able to find me pretty easily. You could probably even Google me. Again, I don't think there's any other Freya Hurwitzes. So pretty easy to find and love to nerd out about it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. That was really fun.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned on today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on the latest in business operations technology, head over to tonkin.com.